Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granta Raj Shiva Bhagavatam ki, Vidilash Maharaj ki, Jai Nidai Gopremanandi. Okay, so what did we discuss in last week's class?
The power of Kartavirya Arjuna. The pride factor should not be there.
Okay. Any other points?
The custom of Kartavirya is to remove the cause of all wrongs, to give us root problems and heaviness.
When Parshuram went and killed all the princes, like all these Kartavirya, Arjuna and other people, when he returned to Janakadri, Janakadri still said we shouldn't have done this, although he was offended. So he said we shouldn't have done this. We should know to forgive.
Good. Any other points?
Why forgiveness is so important for Brahmins?
Yeah.
Any reason? Why? Because.
Why is it so important?
Yeah. Because Jamnagni is telling his son that you have to go to different places. Pilgrimage. He has done a great sin.
Because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Matra Spashastu Kunteya Shitoshna Sukadukada. So he says, be titiksha. So titiksha means tolerate. So tolerate means like to forgive. Be forgiving means to tolerate. So Krishna's first instruction, you are not the body, you are the soul. That means a brahmana. A brahmana is one who understands he is not the body, he is the soul. And the second instruction Krishna gives is that you must tolerate. So to transcend this world or to become detached from this world, you have to learn tolerance or forgiveness. That's the only way you'll understand your spirit by nature. Lord Chaitanya says, Trinada pisuni chena, trodha pisishnana. So it means that if you don't become like that, if you don't actually imbibe that consciousness, then you cannot transcend this world. If you're already always upset with everything someone is doing to you, you'll never get out of this world
because yes,
you're too bound. So he says, just forgive, just tolerate. Everything's very temporary, and focus on Krishna, and then you can transcend this world. So.
And one point Prabhupada mentioned also that because you have killed the emperor, so that becomes a very good sin. You should not kill an emperor, even though he did a very nefarious task. Taking away Kamdhenu. Excellent father, Jamnagni.
Yeah, that's good. Anything else?
I think that's high. No, no further points.
Nothing else. Anyone else? So tonight we'll continue with chapter 16, and tomorrow night we will finish chapter 16. And so what is chapter 16 called? Destroys the ruling class. So he destroys the Kshatriyas 21 times. It's a very interesting pastime of how Parashuram defeats all the Kshatriyas. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, "My dear Maharaj Parikshit, son of the Kuru dynasty, when Lord Parashuram was given this order by his father, he immediately agreed, saying, 'Let it be so.' For one complete year he travelled to holy places, then he returned to his father's residence. Once when Ranuka, the wife of Jamadagni, went to the bank of the Ganges to get water, she saw the king of the Gandharvas decorated with a garland of lotuses and sporting in the Ganges with celestial women, apsaras." So you'll see in the first verse that Parashuram, in order to atone for his sins, he went to all the holy places. So it is mentioned like that in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto of Kapila's teachings, that one should not go to the holy places simply to take bath in the holy waters like the cows or the buffalo. In other words, the main point or the main purpose of going to the holy places is to associate with the sadhus who reside there and get purified by their association. Now we see that many people, they go to the holy dham, but the whole motivation of going to the holy dham is simply to release oneself of offences. But that is not the actual reason for going to the holy dham. The actual reason for going to the holy dham is to remember Krishna, to purify one's consciousness and to focus on Krishna. So this is the actual purpose. So in order to achieve this, the best method is to associate with the sadhus who are residing there. So not everyone can go to the holy dham every year. That is difficult for some devotees. So therefore, Prabhupada, on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has created these dhams all over the world. So Prabhupada actually said that this is not Melbourne, it is Vaikuntha. And then he said, it is Vrindavan. So this is a holy dham. So if you cannot go to the holy dham, then you come here and then you purify yourself. But even many people, we see every week, people come here to the temple, but it is just to get rid of some pap. They come, they put some money in the hundi, and they do some bowing in front of the deities, and they perform some. But that's not the actual purpose of coming to the holy dham. Right? The actual purpose of coming here is to associate with the sadhus. Also to see the deities and to perform bhakti and the different angas of bhakti, chant the holy names, to see the deities, to hear the Bhagavatam. But the principal reason is to associate with the devotees. Because if you do not associate with the devotees, you don't get purified. And this is what makes the difference between a Kanishtha Adhikari and a Majjhima Adhikari. Kanishtha Adhikari means he doesn't appreciate association of devotees. A Majjhima Adhikari is one who appreciates the association of devotees. And he always tries to get the association of more advanced devotees. So that is the principle of the Majjhima. So we should be Majjhima. Prabhupada expected that everyone in ISKCON was a Majjhima Adhikari. He expected that. Not that we are Kanishtha Adhikari. Not that we are simply just coming and worshipping the deity, but we need to associate with the devotees primarily. So the purpose of this temple is to give sadhu sangha. It is to hear the Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. That is the purpose. So if you go to Vrindavan and you just take bath in the Jamuna, or if you go to Mayapur, you just take bath in the Ganga, that is incomplete. It is extremely beneficial, no doubt, but it is incomplete, especially if you don't go with the right motivation. But the reason we go there is to associate with sadhus, with saintly persons. By associating with them, then we advance in Krishna consciousness. So here, Jamadagni, Parashuram, he came to the holy dham, but he had that reason to associate with spiritual people, not just traveling around, not just bathing in the holy waters. So we should also go to the holy dham, but the reason should be correct, and that is to associate with sadhus. Any points? She had gone to bring water from the Ganges, but when she saw Chitrarata, the king of the Gandharvas, sporting with the celestial girl, she was somewhat inclined toward him and failed to remember that the time for the fire sacrifice was passing. Later, understanding that the time for offering the sacrifice had passed, Renuka feared a curse from her husband. Therefore, when she returned, she simply put the water pot before him and stood there with folded hands. The great sage, Jamadagni, understood the adultery in the mind of his wife. Therefore, he was very angry and told his sons, "My dear sons, kill this sinful woman." But the sons did not carry out his order. Jamadagni then ordered his youngest son, Parashuram, to kill his brothers, who had disobeyed this order, and his mother, who had mentally committed adultery. Lord Parashuram, knowing the power of his father, who was practicing meditation and austerity, killed his mother and brothers immediately.
The word Prabhava Jana is significant. Parshuram knew the prowess of his father, and therefore he agreed to carry out his father's order. He thought that if he refused to carry out the order, he would be cursed. But if he carried it out, his father would be pleased. And when his father was pleased, Parshuram would ask the benediction of having his mother and brothers brought back to life. Parshuram was confident in his regard, and therefore he agreed to kill his mother and brothers.
Mm. So what are the points here?
Circumstances
and according to that. Yeah.
Any other points? One has to be intelligent enough to carry out orders of the superiors. Even if it is not conducive, and if he is able to do the service, hopefully, so in this case we can see.
But it was easy for him because he was the incarnation of the Lord himself.
Everything is easy for him. Any other point?
Faith and conviction on the instructions to be executed from the superiors. Any instruction to be executed from our superiors or secret rules. There should be a factor of faith and conviction on it.
Yeah.
I would personally say it's a heinous crime to kill your own mother and brother.
Yeah.
But realizing that his father is so powerful, the Prabhupada writes, Jnanatna Gna, Prabhupada. So he knew.
Mm.
But because otherwise he was going to be cursed. Or maybe the father could have killed him also.
Mm.
So in order to avoid that situation, he took the order and hid it and then asked them to begin. Come back to life.
Hmm. Anything else? Okay. So, in this particular case, we're seeing that he is doing something which is ordinary, not recommended. But the point is that the Bhagavatam is teaching us at this point, this is a reoccurring theme that we keep going through. And it's coming up a lot again in the final canto leading into the 10th canto, that one has to become offenseless if one wants to transcend the material energy. One of the main things which keeps us bound in this material world is offenses. We tend to offend, and the Acharyas have described there are four types of offenses. There's Vaishnava Parad, Nama Parad, Seva Aparad, and then Jiva Aparad, or Jana Aparad. So these different offenses there. So it is significant that we should learn not to offend the Jivas. It means any living entity. If you have an offensive mentality, which means you will harm another living entity, either verbally or mentally or physically, then that offense keeps you in this material world. Of course, Prabhupada points out it's practically impossible to be completely offenseless, practically. But still, the mentality must be given up. And the Bhagavatam is spoken for those who are nimatsara, which means those who are free from envy. If you're free from envy, then you can go back to the spiritual world. And what is the proof that you're free from envy? You don't offend others. If we're still committing offenses, that means we're not free from envy, and we're not qualified to go back into the spiritual world. So it's a very deep level of cleansing of the consciousness. Our level of cleansing at this point in time is somewhat superficial. But it has to go on to the deepest level of our consciousness, that we are cleansed from the desire to offend another living entity. Even to think negatively of another living entity, that has to be cleansed away. So it is a powerful level of purification which needs to take place. So here we're seeing that there have been offences committed. Jamadagni, he is offended by his wife's behaviour. So she's committed some offence. He says to the sons, then you kill the mother, they disobey the father. So in one sense, there's some offence there because he's a great personality. And then ultimately, all of this is a pastime of the Lord, something to transpire. But the point is that we should become offenseless. We have to learn to avoid offenses within our spiritual life. Committing offenses in spiritual life is one of the main things which holds us back in spiritual life. To get the blessings of the devotees is the most important thing in spiritual life to progress. In other words, when the devotees are feeling very kind towards you, then you progress in spiritual life. But if the devotees are dissatisfied with your state of consciousness, you can't progress in spiritual life. So we have to develop the type of behavior and character that automatically devotees will feel favorable towards us. And the more blessings we get, then the easier it becomes to progress. There's many reasons why devotees do not advance, or many reasons why devotees struggle in their spiritual life. But one of the main reasons is that we are offensive. So it is described in the 10th canto, near the end of the 10th canto, that Bhrigu Muni goes to visit the three guna avatars. He visits Brahma, and then Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. And Prabhupada explains that these are three levels of offense. So one means a physical offense, one means a verbal offense or a vocal offense, and the other one is a mental offense. So that's the most subtle, is the mental offense. But actually, all the others are coming from the mentality. So it is our mentality which needs to be changed. Because if you are thinking inappropriately, then you speak inappropriately. If you're thinking inappropriately, then you act inappropriately. So it has to be cleansed from the inner core of the consciousness. So what is the methodology to cleanse ourselves?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Yeah, to chant the Maha Mantra. So Lord Chaitanya says, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. So this is the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. The philosophy of the Bhagavatam is you must cleanse the consciousness to become nirmatsara. Because nirmatsara means free from envy. If you're not envious, you won't offend. And we see, I know myself and I know practically all of us, most of us. Then if you analyze your consciousness, you'll see you're very critical on the mental platform. We're very critical of others. We may not say it, but we do think it. A lot of the time we do think. We tend to find faults in others very easily and continuously. It's a pattern that we get into. Just like one advanced devotee, he's a guru in our movement, and he was explaining that one of the vows that he was going to take for the Kartik Mass was not to offend any devotees, not to criticize any devotees. But he said he had to give the vow up on the first day of Kartik, because he couldn't maintain it. Because, you know, practically on the first day, it's so ingrained in our consciousness to say something negative about another devotee or to even do something negative to another devotee who's there. And I see amongst the devotees, quite often when the guru comes, the devotees begin to fight amongst one another, the god brothers and the other devotees, about how to serve the guru, who will serve the guru, when to serve the guru, and they argue amongst themselves. And actually it's completely a Kanishta mentality. And they think that they're advancing in Krishna consciousness, but a lot of the time you're just committing offences. So how do you expect to advance? How is the guru pleased if all the disciples are arguing amongst themselves? But we see it. I see it practically every time these gurus come. You know, they have meetings, disciple meetings. Everyone gets together, and then people get upset because this one got this service and that one got that service, and it's an improper mentality which takes place. So how do you expect to advance in Krishna consciousness? Actually, the real mood of a devotee, and we say this all the time, but none of us really practice it, is Gopi Bhatu Pada Kamali or Dasa Dasa Anandasa. That one time, one of Prabhupada's disciples, they drew a picture of Radha and the gopis, and all the gopis were pushing Radha towards Krishna. And Prabhupada said, that's the mood in the spiritual world, that you push the other devotees towards Krishna to do service. Not that I have to be the prominent one or the first one to serve the spiritual master or to serve the deity or... just like... I see, you know, sometimes there's the Abhishek going on in the temple. And, you know, on one of the festival days. It was a festival day not that long ago. I can't remember which one it was. Maybe it was Lord
Rama.
Yeah, Gopanim or Ramachandra's appearance or something. And, you know, one of the devotees just like walked in and walked over everyone else just to sit in front of the deity. Like that. But what's the mentality? You think the deity sees you more because you're sitting in the front? But devotees do, you see. I see devotees, they walk practically over everyone else and like that. It's the wrong mentality. Actually, the deity sees the devotee who has the best service attitude, not the one who's sitting in the front. But that's our mentality. We think, oh, if I'm at the front, then I will get the mercy. In one sense, that's true. Prabhupada said that the duck that quacks the loudest, he gets the most mercy. So we have to have that mentality. We have to be eager to serve, but not in the way that we will discriminate or push other devotees aside, or we become. And it's interesting. You see, sometimes devotees, you can see it in their consciousness, they become envious when someone else gets the guru's association. Someone else gets the spiritual master's association, and we become envious. It's almost like we want the guru's association to ourselves. So that all these things are Kanishta mentality. So Prabhupada says you have to look within your consciousness, deep within your heart, within your consciousness, to see what is actually taking place there. So that's what Prabhupada explains in the third chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Each one of us has to be introspective and analyze our own consciousness. How do we feel towards others? And we have to see, are we envious towards others? And we are. We're envious. The thoughts come up, the feelings come up. If we see someone else with a guru, we become envious. Why isn't it me? If someone else gets some attention or mercy, we think, why isn't it me? These thoughts come, which means the consciousness is not pure yet. So the Bhagavatam is for those who are near Matsara. So unless we become offenseless, and this is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us again and again and again, especially in this final canto, if we don't become offenseless, we cannot go back to Krishna. So any points?
See, Prabhuji, the father was not right either, because even Lord forgives for committing any sin mentally. She didn't do anything mentally, I mean physically. She just did mentally. So he should not have taken such a strong action. So he was so great, but I don't think he was right.
Yeah, these are very great persons, and Krishna must have had a plan.
Yeah, it must be the Lord's
plan. I think it's the Lord's plan.
In the
best way. Parashuram had a plan.
Yeah.
I got you that time. Because normally you say everything is Krishna's plan, but in this case it actually is.
Yeah.
In this case it actually is. Okay, any other points? Jamadagni, the son of Satyavati, was very much pleased with Parashurama and asked him to take any benediction he liked. Lord Parashurama replied, "Let my mother and brothers live again and not remember having been killed by me. This is the benediction I ask." This is like an extraordinary benediction. So this shows how powerful the living entities were previously, in the previous yugas. They could bring people back to life. It describes in the Bhagavatam, the Ashwamedha yajnas, they kill the horse before, or the Rajasuya sacrifice, they kill the horse, or the goat, or the cow, even says sometimes. And then they bring it back to life. Here's the potency of these personalities. Even it says in the Mahabharata, they would go and fight all day, and they would be covered with wounds, you know, from fighting. You know, something like get shot with arrows and all those things. And then they would come back, the corridors would come back, and Bhishma, the great grandfather, he would put herbs, like Ayurvedic medicines, he would put on the wound, and he would chant mantra. And in the morning they'd wake up and the wound was healed. Then everyone was full of power again. It also mentions earlier in the Bhagavatam, the demigods and the demons, they would fight, and sometimes they would be injured, and then Shukracharya would put them in certain ponds and waters, and then they come out and they'd be fully regenerated again. So these are very powerful things. These happened previously. These are subtle sciences.
Mm-hmm. He would even give them life.
He
would give them life.
Bring people back to life. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Chitraketu's son was brought back to life by Narada, like that. So these are things were possible previously. That was the potency, and these were the subtle mantras. These subtle sciences are being lost these days. Now we have the gross sciences, just like in medicine. Previously they could heal you by herbs and these things. These days you have to take chemicals and you have to take all these things. So the medicine has changed because people have become degraded. But previously they could heal you by herbs and mantras and these things. So the more we can go back to that way of living, the healthier we will be. So, any points?
That means the medical science was very much developed.
Yeah.
Ayurvedic and surgery of Sushruta. Mm. He could do a lot of operations without anesthetic.
You should learn to do that. Any other points? Thereafter, by the benediction of Jamadagni, Lord Parashuram's mother and brothers immediately came alive and were very happy, as if awakened from sound sleep. Lord Parashuram had killed his relatives in accordance with his father's order because he was fully aware of his father's power, austerity and learning. So they came back to life. So one lesson to learn is that we should follow the guru's order perfectly, If the guru gives us instruction, then we should follow it. Or the father is a great personality, like a rishi, then we should also follow perfectly the instructions. So there's one thing that we learned. The Parashuram perfectly followed the instructions, whereas the brothers did not, and the mother did not. So it's showing us that we should become a perfect disciple. What's that?
I do it as well.
And you'll see in the Mahabharata, we see these examples were also given there. Just like Karna. Karna, he went to train under who?
Parashuram.
Parashuram. So the same personality. Karna went to him and he was training. And then Parashuram was very affectionate to him because Karna had said that he was a Brahmana. And he's very, he said, then I will teach you. If you're Kshatriya, I will kill you. But if you're a Brahmana, I will teach you. So he said, I'm Brahmana. So then he was massaging him one time. Karna was massaging Parashuram. Parashuram was laying down, his head was on his thigh, and he was massaging the head of his guru. Right? And then one insect came to test him. I think it was Indra. Indra took the form and then threw his leg. Right? And the blood came, and when Parashuram felt the blood, then he said, where is this from? He said, oh, one insect went through. He said, I did not want to disturb you. He said, then you are not a Brahmana. Because a Brahmana would not tolerate this. Only a Kshatriya has the potency to tolerate that level of pain. So he says, because you have lied to me, he said, then everything I've taught you, when you needed it, when you're facing your most powerful enemy, when you're in front of your most powerful enemy, and you need the mantras I've taught you, everything will be forgotten. So then even though he learned everything, because he was such a dedicated disciple, but he did not please his guru, so then everything was lost. So another example is given in the Mahabharata of Ekalavya. Remember Ekalavya was the, he wanted to be the disciple of Drona. So he was such a good archer, he even surpassed Arjuna. But he did not satisfy his guru properly. Because, what was it with Ekalavya? Yeah, but why was Dronacharya not satisfied?
Because he had stolen the knowledge. He had not accepted it properly.
Yeah, in other words, he didn't have the right attitude towards the guru. And because he didn't have the right attitude, and because Arjuna did have the right attitude, then when he said, Drona said, you need to give me dakshina. And he said, what shall I give? He said, you give your thumb. Which means he could not shoot the arrow perfectly anymore. So this is the point. In the great teachings, the great scriptures, we have to learn to follow the guru perfectly. And our defect is many of us do not follow the guru perfectly. Therefore, we're not advancing enough in Krishna consciousness. And when we learn to follow the guru properly and the guru is satisfied, then we get the blessings of Krishna. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati gatopi. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that if you serve the guru, automatically you will get Krishna's blessings. But if you do not satisfy the guru, then you will not get Krishna's blessings. That's the point. Any points here?
Well, the thing is, we have, if, I mean, it's alright in most of the circumstances, but if there is some conflict, then you have got to see whether he's saying according to Shastra or not. I know how the Bani Maharaj did. He disobeyed his guru and instead he gave charity to the Vishnu. You have got to see if you think that your guru is not saying something right, then you have got to think what the Shastra is saying.
Reject the guru. None of us have to worry about that. Any other point? Which verse are we on?
Nine.
Nine. My dear King Parikshit, the sons of Kartavir Arjuna, who were defeated by the superior strength of Parashuram, never achieved happiness, for they were always remembered the killing of their father. Brihabanam.
Jamadagni was certainly very powerful due to his austerities, but because of his slight offense by his poor wife, Renuka, he ordered that she be killed. This certainly was a sinful act, and therefore Jamadagni was killed by the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna. As described herein, Lord Parashurama was also infected by sin because killing Kartavirya Arjuna, although this was not very offensive. Therefore, whether one be Kartavirya Arjuna, Lord Parashurama, Jamadagni, or whoever one may be, one must act very cautiously and sagaciously. Otherwise, one must suffer the result of sinful activities. This is the lesson we receive from Vedic literature.
So, what are the points in this parable?
So, we have to act very cautiously and sagaciously.
Only here we see that Jamadagni had the power to revive his wife and son. So, would not Lord Parshuram have revived his father? Because he is Lord himself.
What is it?
That we see that Parshuram's father was a potent to revive the lives of his wife and children. When Lord Parshuram would divide the life of his father, because he is himself wrong, and
these are Leelas. Leelas means there is a reason why they're performing the pastimes, why they want these things to happen. So,
but if the Lord wanted, he could have done it.
Yeah, of course. There's no question. Any other points?
Yes, the Lord Siddhila is trying to tell us that you're about to be very careful. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you are very high or you are low. If you do something wrong, you can't do it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when we do devotional service,
yeah,
it is said that it will destroy all the sinful activities. But here it is saying even Jamadagni or whoever it will be, they will suffer. So how do we?
Everyone?
So here it is saying that if we do some sinful acts, we must suffer from that.
Yeah.
But in devotional service, we say if one performs devotional service, the sins will be destroyed like that.
Yeah, so then the 10 offenses against the holy name say if you commit sin on the strength of chanting, that's also an offense. So if you think like, I can do this sin because I'm chanting, and that will counteract the offense, then that's worse. Because you're sinning in knowledge. And you're using Krishna like the doormat. You think, I can do the sins and then I just do some chanting and it all disappears. So then that is, Krishna does not appreciate being treated like that. So then secondly is that we may have committed sins, or we did, we committed sins before we became devotee. So then Prabhupada explains then that's like you pull the cord out from the fan and the fan slowly winds down. So our karma is not completely gone, but it will take some time. So according to how much you surrender, then that's how much the sins are destroyed. But the karma is still coming. Moksha yashami masucha. Krishna says, I will deliver you. But that depends on how much you surrender. If you surrender fully, you're delivered fully. If you're not surrendered fully, then you have to suffer still. But for a devotee, it's not such a problem, because I was just speaking to Aniruddha Prabhu then, and the astrologers were talking about some astrology and thing, and the astrologer says, okay, in this period your life will change. But Aniruddha Prabhu said, like, it's just a different set of problems, that's all. You're in one the astrologer said, oh, this period is not a good period, but every period is not a good period. When do we ever feel peaceful and happy in this world?
Mm-hmm.
And as you get older, everything gets worse. You know, my Guru Maharaj said that, you know, sometimes people, they always say that, you know, things will get better. But in the material world, it gets worse.
Never gets better.
No, it doesn't get better. At least in my experience, everything just gets worse. Just like my grandfather died today.
Oh.
I just found out. They rang this morning.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. But my grandmother said she went into the hospital because he left in the Royal Melbourne, not the hospital, but the like respite centre, the care centre, where they, just behind the hospital. So she said she went to see, they called and they said he passed, so she went to see him, so his mouth was open. Like that. Because when I became a devotee, he said, this is very good. And I went to see him 3 weeks ago, I went to visit him because he was in that hospital. And he said, this is very good. He said, what you do, not just me, but he said, you people, this is very good. So he appreciated the devotion, that's devotional service. So when he died, it says when you're pious, the mouth opens and the soul goes. Yeah. Yeah, if you're a good person. So he's liberated. Because, you know, he's purified. He came into the temple, took prasadam. You know, he's a good man. I would give him prasadam when I go and see him. I'd give him some prasadam. He would always take it. He liked the spinach pies.
Mm-hmm.
Was he in intensive care ICU?
He was 89, so yeah. His whole life was intensive care. You know, when you get to that age, then. So, that's the material world. It's always full of problems. It's always difficult. And as you get older, it just becomes more and more problematic. So a devotee, he sees that when these problems come, they are sent by Krishna. When the difficulties come, this is sent by Krishna. Why? To purify us. So when our karma is coming, right, every day, we are facing some new difficulty. And the longer you stay around in life, it just becomes more difficult. So each time the difficulty comes, the devotee thinks, this is sent by Krishna to purify me. So that's the mentality of the devotee. So difficulties always come because of our previous sinful reactions. But then when they come, we just kind of accept them. We think that's Krishna. Krishna's purifying me. Does that answer the question? Any other point?
It's
hard
to take it.
What's that?
It's a bit hard to take it.
Take it. Yeah, it's true. Not easy.
Yeah.
Prabhupada said he was in the spiritual world with Krishna before he came here. And Krishna said, I want you to go and preach. And Prabhupada said, I don't like austerity. Prabhupada said that to Krishna in the spiritual world. And Krishna said, you just go and I will make all the arrangements for you, for your preaching. And then Krishna won the argument and Prabhupada said, okay, I will go. So when you come to this material world, it is difficult. Even for Prabhupada, it was a struggle. You know, he had to struggle so many things. Yeah, more than we realize, actually. More than we realize. If you read Hari Sori Prabhu's diary, and you realize how difficult it was for Prabhupada. Any other points?
How was he doing 64 rounds a day?
What's that?
How was he doing 64 rounds a day?
Prabhupada? Prabhupada wasn't doing 64. Prabhupada was doing 16.
I thought his Guru Maharaj used to initiate with 64.
No, not only initiate with 64. If you're like living in the ashram, Brahmachari Sannyasi in the Gaudiya Math, then 64. But the Grihasthas were not 64. Prabhupada said he used to chant 4 blocks of 4 rounds when he was a Grihastha. He said, like, you know, I think after lunch, after dinner, after breakfast, and in the morning early when he got up, like 4, 4, 4, 4. That's how Prabhupada did 16. For us, it's good if we can do 16. One shot, yeah. But that's difficult. I don't do that. I usually do two groups. Not devotees shouldn't do 1, 1, 1, 1. That's not very good. Yeah, shouldn't just do one or, and you can't do half. Some devotees do half. That's not bona fide. You have to do one. like that. But if you're doing one and then two and then three and then one, and then that's not very good either. I basically, most of my life I do two blocks. One in the morning, get up, chant, and then later in the day, then I find another block, another time, and then I finish the other block. That's the best system. Best is one, all together. Prabhupada says, best is 16 rounds finished before Mangalati.
Wow.
Prabhupada said, if you could do that, you'll be brahmachari your whole life. Sankarshan Prabhu, yeah. Yeah, he gets, I think he's up 2 o'clock in the morning. All rounds done. Yeah, that's advanced.
Kadam
Karan Swami.
Kadam
When he's in Mayapur, yeah. Not when he's traveling. When in Mayapur, he does, yeah. Mayapur, he gets up. But when he's traveling, he, because, you know, it's preaching, so he has to. Any other points?
See, in 80s, the ladies used to chant, and if they had to do something, they used to put their hairpin to just mark where they finished. So, your Guru Maharaj, the Mahakrishna Maharaj, said not to do this. It was very strict.
Yeah, you can't chant half round.
No, so. They used to put the hairpin in the mark, and so he said, no, you cannot put the pin in there.
Yeah. Anything else? Once when Parashuram left the ashram for the forest with Vasuman and his other brothers, the sons of Kartavir Arjuna took the opportunity to approach Jamadagni's residence to seek vengeance for their grudge. The sons of Kartavir Arjuna were determined to commit sinful deeds. Therefore, when they saw Jamadagni sitting by the side of the fire to perform jagya and meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is praised by the best of selected prayers, they took the opportunity to kill him.
Yeah.
With pitiable prayers, Ranuka, the mother of Parashuram and wife of Jamadagni, begged for the life of her husband. But the sons of Kartavir Arjuna, being devoid of the qualities of Kshatriyas, was so cruel that despite her prayers, they forcibly cut off his head and took it away. Lamenting in grief for the death of her husband, the most chaste Ranuka struck her own body with her hands and cried very loudly, "O Ram, my dear son, Ram." Although the sons of Jamadagni, including Lord Parashuram, were a long distance from home, as soon as they heard Ranuka loudly calling, "O Ram, O my son," they hastily returned to the ashram, where they saw their father already killed. Virtually bewildered by grief, anger, indignation, affliction, and lamentation, the sons of Jamadagni cried, "O Father, most religious, saintly person, you have left us and gone to the heavenly planets." So you see how much attachment there is between the family members in the Vedic culture. So this is a good thing, actually. That in the Vedic culture you see there's such bond in the family.
Very close, guys.
Yeah, everyone is close. And everyone cries a lot. So that is the Vedic culture. There's such strong attachment. So we should use that as a, it's like a platform to advance in Krishna consciousness. Because it gives you stability, psychological stability. So it means that from that platform, then you can advance. But later, then you have to transcend your attachment to the body also. It is good to have close families. This is not, it's not to be avoided. Unless the family are non-devotees or they're trying to take you away from Krishna consciousness. But otherwise, we should be close with the family. Just like Prabhupada said, that the husband and wife should be very loving and affectionate towards each other. That should be there. It is not maya to be loving and affectionate towards the wife or the husband. That is good. That is desirable for Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada said it should not become like too much affection or material affection. Gradually it should come to the spiritual platform, where you see each other in relationship to your eternal identity with Krishna. So this is the platform that we should come to. So you see here there's such close affection between the family. So this is wanted, actually. Later on then you can fully transcend it. But at least in the beginning it's beneficial.
But they were all sannyasis.
What's that?
But they all the sons were sannyasis.
I don't think so. They were chaturis. Oh, sorry, no, they were brahmins. But yeah, I don't think it mentions sannyas. So, any other points?
Are we saying that you shouldn't have so much affection with children? There should be too much love between husband and wife, but not so much with children, is it? What we are saying then?
No, no. With
children also.
Yeah, Prabhupada said also children. Yeah, he said that we should see the children as Vaikuntha children. So you should, Prabhupada says you should, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, we should see them as Krishna's servants. Like that. If they're being nonsense, then okay, that's different, but if they're following, then we should. Okay. Thus lamenting, Lord Parashuram entrusted his father's dead body to his brothers and personally took up his axe, having decided to put an end to all the chaturis on the surface of the world. O King, Lord Parashuram then went to Mahishmati, which was already doomed by the sinful killing of a brahmana. In the midst of the city, he made a mountain of heads severed from the bodies of the sons of Kartavir, Arjuna. So in the commentary, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, the city became completely inauspicious. So why was the city inauspicious? Yeah, because the brahmana was offended. Which means a saint, a great sage was offended. So if we commit offences, then that place becomes inauspicious. And if we offend a great devotee, it becomes very detrimental. So you'll see, it's like you'll see so many places they offend the devotees. What's the prime example in the news at the moment? Which country is struggling?
Russia.
Yeah, Greece. Greece is, it's on the news every day at the moment. They are struggling. So it's interesting because it's one place where they haven't taken up Krishna consciousness. I don't even know if we have a temple there. I think it's one of the only places in the whole world where ISKCON doesn't have a... Okay. We might have a centre. We might. But very hard to preach there. One of my good friends, Tara Prabhu, he preached there for a number of years, but in the end he left. It was so difficult to preach there. And a lot of it is because they're committing so much offence, so much aparad. Is taking place there. Huge meat eaters, that country. He said it was practically impossible to get vegetarian food.
Jivaparad,
ultimately. So because of so much offence in that country, now there's so many problems coming in the country. So wherever offences are committed, that place becomes very inauspicious. And if we offend devotees, right, our devotional service becomes very inauspicious. It becomes very difficult to advance in Krishna consciousness. Especially if they're advanced devotees, then. Just wrecks everything. So, any points?
Modi in India is banning the export of gold.
He's banning?
Mm-hmm. Banned. And whoever does the 50,000 rupees something fine, and they go for Myanmar.
For 6 months.
That's good.
I just read that he has interested at least 20,000 soldiers near Bangladesh border because thousands of cows were taken every day. So now there are no more cows going from India to Bangladesh for slaughter. They're totally slaughtered, at least in those areas.
Yeah, then they just got to clean up the whole of India.
Yes.
The mission. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
When one truck committed the accident, they found out they were illegally exporting the cows.
There's a big movement now coming. ISKCON and also other Vaishnavas really pushing this in India now.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we push it, then Australia is our Prabhupada Desh, the place where we have to bridge. Australia's big problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're second biggest in the world, beef exporter. Biggest is India, and we're number two in the whole world.
First is India.
No, first is New Zealand.
No, not on cow slaughter. India's number one.
Wow.
New Zealand's only got 3 million people. It's not even. Melbourne's bigger than New Zealand. So they're not per capita. No, India's number one on cow slaughter. Yeah, and Australia's number two on cow slaughter. Like that. So we have to preach here. It's hard to preach here. In India, at least there's some dharma. But here, there's. Yeah, it's difficult to preach it. Okay. With the blood of the bodies of these sons, Lord Parashuram created a ghastly river, which brought great fear to the kings who had no respect for Brahminical culture. Because the Kshatriyas, the men of power in government, were performing sinful activities, Lord Parashuram, on the plea of retaliating for the murder of his father, rid all the Kshatriyas from the face of the earth 21 times. Indeed, in the place known as Samanta Panchaka, he created 9 lakes filled with their blood. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
Parashuram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his eternal mission is Parikaranaya Sarunam Namasaya Chakushukam, to protect the devotees and annihilate the miscreants. To kill all the sinful men is one among the tasks of incarnation of Godhead. Lord Parashuram killed all the Kshatriyas 21 times consecutively because they were disobedient to the Brahminical culture. That the Kshatriya had killed his father was only a plea. The real fact is that because the Kshatriya, the ruling class, had become polluted, their position was inauspicious. Brahminical culture is enjoined in the Shastras, especially in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnam Mayasvishtam Gunakarma Vibhavasham. According to the laws of nature, whether at the time of Parashuram or at the present, if the government becomes irresponsible and sinful, not caring for Brahminical culture, there will certainly be an incarnation of God like Parashuram to create a devastation by fire, famine, pestilence, or some other calamity. Whenever the government disrespects the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and fails to protect the institution of Manashram Dharma, it will certainly have to face such catastrophes as formerly brought about by Lord Parashuram.
Mm. So what are the points here?
So something might happen in this
week? Yeah, definitely. In due course of time, isn't it? Big problem. Anything else?
When they came in Nepal, they slaughtered the cows and then there was a
earthquake. Yeah, it's a good point. So basically, what's being said is that whenever there is, whenever human society is breaking the laws of Dharma. Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. It means that all of the laws of Dharma are given by Krishna himself ultimately. So when you break the laws of Dharma, then you will definitely get the reactions. And what are the reactions? There will be catastrophe within the human society. Or if you take it to a micro level, then in our personal lives, if we break the laws of Dharma, then we will have catastrophe in our personal lives. And if society as a whole is breaking, then there will be catastrophe in society. So it's just a matter of time. And now we're seeing it unfolding around the world, right? Right before our eyes. We're seeing all the catastrophes beginning to happen. So many difficulties which are taking place. Just like they're saying in California, the water's running out. Right? In Greece, the economy is crashing. Right? And then in all the different countries, there's some problem. Right? And Australia will eventually be hit by the problems as well. already they're taking place. But, actually, it's a severe drought. Victoria, this part of Australia, is in a drought, quite a heavy drought at this point in time. There's a lot of problems up in the north of Victoria because there's no rain. It's causing a lot of problems. And it's all because of sinful activity, as we know. They're breaking the laws of Dharma, which are given by God Himself. So it's our duty to preach and try to convince them to practice the laws of Dharma.
Also, the fire which is causing up in the north, it's not this forest fire which comes in. Now, and we keep hearing there's so much of forest fire which is coming. And government has to spend billions of dollars to restore.
Yeah.
It's like fire, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, more fires are coming. Our farm will be burnt. It was burnt in 1983. It will be burnt again. It will come. The whole farm will be burnt.
Why?
What's that?
Why did it be burnt?
Because it's just the law of nature that every, you know, so many years, like down there, like 1930s, 1940s, big fires, that whole area. In 1983, it happened again, and it's just a matter of time. Because when that fire starts, no one can stop it. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of time. I don't know if you'll stop it.
But there was no farm there, Hare Krishna farm that time.
Yeah, hopefully it goes around the farm.
Yeah.
Hopefully, but last time we went through the farm, so we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But wouldn't it be because devotees are practicing sincerely, they won't be protected, although there are so many...
Yeah, protected means we won't be on the farm. Because they give the warnings, they tell you the day before, tomorrow is going to be extreme weather, so then all the devotees leave the farm.
And don't it happen when person was making the card for Jagannath, and whole around his house it was a big fire, and devotee was praying for him, he's helping us, and only his house is on fire.
Sometimes it happens. So we'll see what happens when it happens. It may happen in our lifetime. It may happen after our lifetime. Big fire will come. It's a material world. You can't stop it. Thereafter, Parashuram joined his father's head to the dead body and placed the whole body and head upon Kusha grass. By offering sacrifices, he began to worship Lord Vasudev, who is the all-pervading supersoul of all the demigods and of every living entity. After completing the sacrifice, Lord Parashuram gave the eastern direction to the Hota as a gift, the south to the Brahma, the west to the Avayu, and the north to the Udgata. And the four corners, northeast, southeast, northwest, and southwest, to the other priests. He gave the middle to Kashyapa, and the place known as Ayurvarta, to the Upadrashta. Whatever remained, he distributed among the Sadashyas and associated priests. Thereafter, having completed the ritualistic sacrificial ceremonies, Lord Parashuram took the bath known as the Avabrita Snan. Standing on the bank of the great river Saraswati, cleared of all sins, Lord Parashuram appeared like the sun in a clear, cloudless sky. So Prabhupada points out in the purport, very nice purport, that jagya purifies the consciousness of the living entities. So we all have to perform jagya, and that purifies everything. All of our sins from the past and our consciousness now, that becomes purified. And Prabhupada points out the best jagya is Sankirtan jagya. And he says, performed for the pleasure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you dance and chant in front of Lord Chaitanya. And what is the point of dancing and chanting in front of Lord Chaitanya? It purifies our consciousness. And when we're purified, then we can follow Dharma easily. We can follow the highest Dharma, which is devotional service. Savaya Pumsan, Puru Dharma, the Paradharma. The highest Dharma is to serve Krishna. So by performing the jagya, we purify our consciousness, and then we can stay on the path of devotional service. Any points?
things to be able to start.
Back to life. Yeah, he can do it, but...
In the next verse, it is saying, I think, he brought his father back. In the next verse,
he does.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got the potency to do it. Whether he does it or not, that's his... There's some leela going on, so that's why. Certain things are allowed to happen, certain things are not allowed to happen. That's because the Lord has a desire to fulfill. But he can do anything he wants. Srila Prabhupada ki.